That's better.
There we go.
It did. It's like noises that I usually hear. Doot, 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 doot.
I let it ring for a second so you'd feel more assured.
Yeah, and this time my recorder picked up too. Before it didn't. I knew something was off.
Maybe I screwed everything up by being such a quick trigger finger.
Yeah, too much like Wally. Well,
Whack 'em.
I'm gonna add Rob, and then Daryl said he'd ping us if he wants on or what.
He said just let him know when we started, so.
Hey.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi.
Welcome to the
Hello.
party.
Good morning. And Mike, who's that I hear with you?
Yeah, it's a New Year's baby.
Oh, baby New Year.
Yeah.
I'm the new host.
How are you, Chris?
Pretty good. A little sleepy.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been up for 4.5 hours, but I just feel a little sleepy.
I didn't get up until 9 today.
Oh man.
I got up way too early.
I don't remember the last time I s usually if I'm in bed at 9, it means I'm sick. But just because you get used to waking up during the week and
Oh yeah. Oh, for
it's
sure.
tough.
Did everyone have a good holiday?
Yeah.
Yeah, holidays were pretty good. How about yourself?
I got a Star Wars smuggler's bundle from somebody.
Yeah, me
Smuggler's
too.
bounty.
Yeah, I don't know where that came from.
Did you get one, Chris? Do you have a
No.
secret admirer?
They must have liked the new version of the Retrocast.
Right, exactly.
I don't know.
They were gonna get
Bill, you
some.
have to ask, did Bill get one? Yeah, I don't know what happened.
I honestly
I was like, did these guys charge me for something I didn't order? Or
I
did
got a
they.
tracking thing too, but it said it was for Marvel Collector Core, and I had already gotten that weeks ago.
I did
And
not get nothing. I
I
got
got a tracking
nothing.
thing. And then it said it was delivered, and I got home, and it was a Star Wars box, not a Marvel box. I'm like, what is this? But obviously, I knew that you had posted something a couple weeks ago.
I usually get a bill that says,
Yeah. But it was so
your card is being charged or something like
right,
that.
yeah.
And that's usually indication that a few weeks later you'll get a email or a couple days later that
Oh, the
says, "Hey,
tracker?
you shipped it, and here's the tracking number."
It was I mean, like I said, the only thing I can think of is that you and I both have the other two boxes
Yeah.
and that they had, I don't know if they've got a surplus of these older boxes and they're passing them out trying to get other people to subscribe or something. I honestly don't
That's
know.
weird though, because it's like a 20-some dollar plus shipping value, so
Yeah.
it's that's a lot of money if they did it to more than me and you.
It's just, but it's, I mean, I don't know, like, where would it have come from?
Don't know. Maybe
I mean,
we're one with
honestly,
the
it's not.
Force, and Chris is with the dark side, so.
Exactly. It didn't encourage me to buy their subscription though.
Did you see Rogue One?
Yeah.
Chris? No, I
No,
was asking.
sorry.
You didn't see it? See,
That
that's why you didn't get a smuggler's
must be
bounty.
why.
We saw it.
That's what it
Because
was.
we're one with the Force and the Force is with us, but you're not.
Yeah, that's what it
Well,
was.
and I was out on the Outer Rim territories this whole, this time that I was gone. That's why I was gone, 'cause I was
That's right.
I don't think they have delivery. The delivery isn't as reliable
Far.
out there in
Yeah.
those planets.
I think you probably are right with that. Yeah, I don't know what's going on. But
But I
I
did get a
really
big box of coal.
Oh,
Maybe
that's terrible.
that's what that it was. There was a note that said, "Stay away from your microphone" or something. So I don't. Maybe that was from the same person.
but if you do find Superman, he could turn that coal into a diamond.
Oh yeah.
That's true. Maybe my little Funko Mini Superman can do that.
That actually comes into play in one of the books that I'm going to cover today.
Ah,
to Diamond.
The Superman 3 movie edition.
No, not that one.
Wasn't it that movie where he did?
No. It might be. I just mean I'm not covering.
Superman 2, maybe.
I don't remember.
It might have been the Superman 3, because I think he crushed Cole into a diamond and gave it to somebody.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I love Superman 3. It's so ridiculous.
Is that the one with Richard Pryor?
Yeah. I can watch that movie over and over again because I love the evil Superman. It's so good.
Maybe I've seen it twice. I don't know. I may have only seen it once.
Yeah. I've seen it maybe 15, 16 times. Probably 10 in the last year.
Really?
Yeah. Okay, so, welcome to RetroCast with Rob and Chris. He's back.
Woo!
From the Outer Rim.
Woo! Back to the beach, y'all.
Yeah. Did you have a good extended break from podcasting? Do you feel rejuvenated?
I think so, because I definitely started feeling the urge the last couple weeks. I think the fact that it fell before the holidays made it so that it made sense to extend it a little, longer than I probably needed to be away.
Yeah.
And that sort of worked out with the holidays and everything like that. But yeah, I think it was helpful.
Yeah.
A little break. Now you're two episodes ahead of me in RetroCasts. So I've appeared on two less than you, Mike. So,
oh my God.
I got the upper hand on me now. You're the
and veteran. Rob has to catch up.
I have a lot of catching up to do. Apparently, I'm going to have to do a lot of solo ones.
Yeah.
Can I just ask, Mike? I just want to ask an off-topic question too, if you don't mind. It has to do with Comic Base.
Yeah.
I renewed my my subscription, and of course I got an extra I got a thing in the mail.
Yeah.
The DVDs in the mail. I already downloaded 2017. Is there anything that I need to do with this DVD?
No. No,
just, I can probably put it in.
It's just there in case you lose.
Oh, okay.
Lose it.
Yeah, I'll check it to manage the pictures because I don't think I downloaded all the pictures.
If you didn't do it the first time, then it's worthwhile. But if
then I'll do that.
You don't need to do it.
Yeah. Okay. I wasn't.
Yeah. If you back up your pictures, you'll never have to do it again. Okay. It's just an easier way to. And then there was an update that came in, like, on one of my updates. I don't know if you got it already.
What was it?
I don't know. It's a new version. It was, like, 2017.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I got that.
Yeah, 19_02 or something like that.
Yeah, I'll double-check mine. But I definitely have the 2017 one.
They fixed that picture bug, which would drive me crazy. If somebody uploaded a picture that was too big, it would do something weird.
Uh-huh.
And they fixed that so it doesn't crash or it doesn't keep popping up icon.
You know what I constantly have, and I don't know if it's just me or if you get this sometimes too, but I get where I'm putting in, like, all I'm doing is searching for these comic book titles and they come up, and then suddenly, like, 2 months later, that they're not progressing along, like, the new issues aren't showing up, and I have to delete it out, and then the complete one pops back up. It happens to me all the time.
That never happens to me.
Oh, my God, every time. It's like, it's usually not simple names.
Send
Mr. Jordan and, where there's multiple ways of saying and the, like.
Oh, oh, I know what that is.
What is that?
Okay. What this is somebody put in a name like Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps, and mm-hmm. it's not the official name inside of the indices. So they release another Hal Jordan and the and the Green Lantern Corps, maybe with an and sign or whatever the official sign is.
Uh-huh.
And then all the books start going into there.
And so I have
linked, so you need to delete the obsolete right. one and keep
which is what
the,
I do.
The,
yeah.
the current one, yeah.
Yeah, it happens to me.
It happens when somebody puts in a title before they put in one.
Gotcha.
And because they're impatient and they don't name it in the official name, because everything, the naming convention has to match the indice or whatever's at the front of the page of the comic book.
Right. Okay.
And if they change and to and or colon to nothing, then that's what it is.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's all it was then. Yeah, it happens every while. I mean, it doesn't happen a lot, but like the last time I entered.
Yeah, Hal Jordan was one of them. That's why when you said the example, I knew what you're talking about.
Oh, okay. Yeah. There's about two or three, like from the last time that I updated from like a 2 week DCBS shipment, I had to delete out and get the official one showing.
Yeah, the only problem I have to do is sometimes fix the barcode scans.
Oh. Yeah, I don't have a scanner, so.
And I don't usually fix it. I just put an alternative one.
Mm-hmm.
The scanner's a big deal for me because I get so many fucking books. Yeah. All right. Well, welcome to Comic Book Database.
Yes. What else should we discuss?
My database actually has an iPhone app.
Well, there you go.
Me and Chris were comparing.
Rob was jealous of it at the Comic-Con.
Yeah, because we have an iPhone. It's not an app. It's just an iPhone web link to your
collection.
Collection, yeah. It's not really an app.
Yep. So there you go.
But I doubt your database could handle the capacity of ours.
That I don't know, because
it just can't.
Mine is much smaller than yours. Yours, yeah. Guys, is. Not to get into sizes and all that, but
you know,
I'll be the first to admit it.
It doesn't matter.
That's true.
That's what they say.
No. Just
it's how you use it, Chris.
Yep, it's just how you use
it. How you use it. Not how big is it.
Exactly.
As soon as you turn out the lights, it all looks the same.
Man.
Yeah.
Out of control.
Comic books. Of course, is what I'm talking about.
I went to go see that Hidden Numbers.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that movie's good.
My wife really wanted to see it. I had no interest, but now I'm thinking, well, maybe we should go.
Go see it. My wife took me there too, but I was blown away.
It's good, huh?
It was inspirational, I think. As an engineer, it inspired me to do better, that's for sure. These women went through so much adversity.
I know, and still
and
do.
Like, that most people would just say, fuck it. You know?
Exactly.
This is ridiculous.
Get yourself up into space.
You know, we just went and got our degrees and blah, blah, blah. They had to fight to get their stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy. Really good movie. That's highly cool. Recommended. And it's kind of retro because it happened in the past.
Yeah, I was waiting for you to try to tie that in somehow.
See? There you go.
One of the women is still alive, I guess. Her and her whole family had a private screening they set up.
Yeah, the That's one cool. that could... There were three main women. One was like an incredible mechanic, or like she knew how to fix IBMs and stuff. And then there was one that was an engineer. You know, she knew physics and engineering. Mm-hmm. And then the third one was like a mathematical prodigy. You know, she could just crunch numbers like nobody's business. And
which one is still alive, do you know?
The one that could crunch the numbers.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, it's a good, really good movie. Highly recommended. Follow your wife's advice. Go see it.
I won't tell her it's because you guys said so.
Yeah. There you go.
You listen to your friends, but you won't listen to me.
Yeah. She'll put up with your Rogue One. You got to put up with the Hidden Numbers.
Exactly.
That's how it works.
Yuppers.
All right. Well, Chris, since you've been Rogue for a while. Do you want to take us down the what books you want to talk about?
Sure, I could do that. I sent Daryl a message if he wanted to join, but he hasn't responded, so.
Oh, I did too.
I thought you
I did
might
not.
Have. That's okay. I think two was enough. For now, at least. We'll see. All right. Well, yeah, I'll start off with something that's sort of unusual for me, at least, I think. But I noticed that I renewed my Marvel Unlimited subscription a little while ago, and I was looking at what they added last week. And, you know, they always add whatever.
New
like,
stuff.
They're always on a rolling, like, each week is what was released 6 months ago that week. But then they tend to also continually add to the back catalog, which is nice. And I noticed that they added a four-issue Invaders miniseries from the 90s that I had never heard of and just felt kind of curious about it. And when I looked into it some more, it turns out that this was considered Invaders Volume 2, I think, because there had been the 70s series that Roy Thomas wrote, and then he wrote this as well, so it's kind of bringing it back. 90s comics, you know, this is the time period where Marvel was sort of dealing with all their top artists having left and created Image, and then, as we all know, Image had a huge impact on the industry, on DC and Marvel, and the look of the books that they were putting out. The artist on this book is a guy named Dave Hoover, who, unfortunately, when I looked him up, it turned out that he passed away in his 50s, didn't have the reason or, you know, how he had passed away, but he did a fair amount of work, including this, a bunch of stuff from Marvel, and I think towards the end of his life, he was teaching at an art school in Philadelphia area. But this was a four-issue miniseries with the hopes that it would catch on and that there more would come from it. It doesn't look like that were the case. But I thought Dave Hoover, his art, he does the pencils, and the inker, his name is Brian Garvey. I thought the art was interesting because it kind of skirts the line between what you would think is like prototypical 90s art, but whilst being a little more, I think the funny thing about it probably is, and one way to say it is that at the time I probably would have liked it less than, say, Liefeld, but nowadays, I like it more.
Yeah, the covers are very Image oriented.
Yeah, so yeah, looking at the cover issue one, it definitely evokes an Image 90s Image feel to me. But taken as a whole,
number two especially, wow. I mean, it looks, there's a lot of like cleavage. You can tell in 90s art.
Mm-hmm.
The facial. Yeah, the facial, the faces, the way the muscular ambiguity, the lines on the arms, you know, mm-hmm. like reflecting hair and stuff.
A lot of hash marks and
stuff.
Yeah,
hash
like
marks
that.
And stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, I've got this miniseries. I don't remember anything about it though.
I have it too. I don't have much of the first series, but I have this one.
That first series was my thing as a little kid. I'm like, what is this? Now, I don't have a ton of – I don't have all of them, but I've got a decent amount just from, like, cheap back issues, even some without covers.
Yeah, so obviously in terms of tone and the writing stuff, it's all, this is also by Roy Thomas, so it kind of falls in line with his style.
He's a wordy guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it is cut down. There's a lot more focus on dialogue, and there aren't a lot of there aren't a lot of wordy captions, so there's definitely an adaption to the time period, whether that was him or whether there was some serious editing going on, or editorial advisement at least, to not to sort of adapt to the time period or not. It's hard to say, but story wise, it has Roy Thomas feel. And one thing I'll say though, like, the art does have a lot of those hallmarks where it wouldn't look out of place. This definitely seems like it was designed to fit into the prevalent art style at the time. Whether you like Liefeld or not, one of the common criticisms against him is that there's problems with anatomical correctness and stuff, and that's not the case here. You know, so I would say that while...
But, you know, I'm going to argue with that statement because Jack Kirby's that way. Do you know what I mean? He's not atomically correct. And
yeah, but
everybody,
I don't know. I see a difference between those. So, I mean, obviously they've got different styles, right? I mean, that's for sure. But I don't know. For whatever reason, I don't have as much problem with Jack Kirby's style as some of the pictures. Some of this, I mean, not everything, but a lot of the stuff from Liefeld.
Look
I
at
think
the,
Kirby's
the...
more exaggerated, where yeah. I think... Well, I felt sometimes it's exaggeration, and then sometimes maybe not as much nowadays. But you know, he was pretty young, and he got attention for his art real fast. Whereas a lot of artists might have had time to work out some of those issues that
most
he had.
Most of them did. I mean,
yeah.
in that
unusual
like
to...
he did a 4-issue Hawk and Dove, and he just blew out of control out of that, you know.
Mm-hmm. And I'm
people
not...
said, what is this style? McFarlane started off in Infinity Inc.
Mm-hmm.
And then yeah. Bang, he blew up in Marvel.
Yeah.
So, you know, they had starts in the Silvestri, who else was it? A lot of them had like Jim Lee. Had mm-hmm. Jim Lee still draws like Jim Lee, but in my opinion he doesn't draw as good as he in Suicide Squad as he's done in the past. He's cutting corners because his panel layouts and what he chooses to do is to use the least amount of lines, I think, for timing. Like you can tell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like his art from back in the day a lot better. As
yeah,
well.
But even when he was doing like Batman and Superman in Justice League, it was big. It was Jim Lee looking.
Mm-hmm.
The new stuff is very, it still has his style, but what he chooses to put on the page mm-hmm. is minimal. And they're really bizarre scenes. Like he'll have like two great splash panels, and then the rest of the panels are like an arm or a leg kicking somebody, or you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So he doesn't have to like draw the full blown figure. It's very
yeah.
different. He's a busy guy.
Yep.
I don't even know how he does it to, because he's probably has like more than a full time job doing what the other stuff he does. And this is probably something that he goes home and draws on his table.
I know.
Right.
Before he goes to bed.
I don't know how he can possibly do that.
Yeah. And that's, they seem to have to make certain accommodations, you know, so that he even is able to do it, you know, by using the backup stories and stuff
yeah.
like that. And yeah. I mean, but I guess it's still a draw for people. It's not a draw for me anymore that he's on a book, but seems to still work for people. But anyway, my point is not that I'm not poking that Rob Liefeld issue again. I'm not meaning to poke at it or.
Well, he just sold his Extreme properties to the movie studio.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder how that'll work out.
Well, it's probably works out for him. Because he sold them.
Oh, sure, sure. I just wonder
he got a
how,
paycheck.
what success. Because, I mean, a lot of those characters are pretty, like, carbon copy of other characters. So I wonder if, you know, I guess maybe they'll have to do some some finagling, and the writers on those projects will have to do some things to make sure that they make them distinguishable, or audience will just see them as like a copycat sort of thing. So,
but they are.
Yeah, that's, so that's why I wonder if they'll be able to make success from it. But anyway, just my point is just that Dave Hoover, I think, does a good job of evoking what was popular at the time stylistically, but grounding it a bit more so that's not so much style over substance. And so it looks like 90s art, but at the same time, it's a little bit more under control, which, you know, is kind of necessary because it's still, even though Roy Thomas's wordiness is pared down, you know, there's still an average of 5 or 6 panels per page, if not more. There's still a lot of dialogue. There's still a lot of story. So there's not room to just do a ton of splash pages or 3-panel pages and things like that. And so I think it works good for the subject matter as well, being that it's so indebted to history, and it picks up where the prior Invader series left off. And so we're still dealing with the World War II setting. But like you noted, Mike, a character that's on the cover of the second issue. She's part of the bad guy team, the Battle Axis, in here, and they are introduced on a splash page, a 5-member group, and one of the female member of the group has a very low cut, one of those necklines that basically plunges all the way down to the navel. And she's on the cover of the second issue, but she's in this issue. She's called Spider Queen.
I love those V-shaped. I've been reading Sue Storm where the 4 is in the skin. I dig that so much.
Oh my gosh. So silly.
I like it. Instead of having the wife, it's got skin.
If ever a character seemed inappropriate for that approach, though, Sue Storm.
They kind of explained it, though.
I don't like it.
Yeah. But, of course, Roy Thomas style, these Battle Axis characters are all drawn from or based on Golden Age. It must be Golden Age, or at least some of them must have been in public domain, because they weren't necessarily Marvel characters, a couple that I was able to look up. Let me see if I can find that again. But basically, one of the things that's interesting about this group to the Invaders is that although they are working for the Nazis, none of them have German accents, none of them have foreign accents at all. The accents that they are able to recognize.
You mean the Battle Axis characters?
Yeah, the Battle Axis characters all have kind of, they're working for the Nazis, but they all sound like Americans. Hmm. So yeah, for example, Spider Queen, her first historic appearance was in an issue of a comic called Eagle that was published by Fox Features Syndicate in 1941.
Spider Queen, the one in the red suit with the yellow gloves?
Yep.
She looks more like a flame bird to me. I mean, based on what I see here.
Yeah, the coloring of her costume and stuff. Yeah. She kind of has spider webs similar to how Spider-Man shoots them out. But anyway, the Invaders encounter this group in the course of working on trying to stop a Nazi sub. And the Battle Axis actually gets the better of them. Temporarily, at least. But I like the way that this also pulls in the Liberty Legion. So when they get back to their headquarters, they meet up with Thin Man, and they talk about Toro and Bucky, and the other Kid Commandos, Golden Girl, and Human Top, how they're off on some business. So the Thin Man is on guard duty, and then they also bring in Miss America and the Wizard, who are on a date, and they actually encounter the Battle Axis as well, and have some difficulty. Miss America is able to escape, but the Wizard is taken hostage by them. So that's where it ends. And there's a text page in the back written by Rory Thomas where he goes through the history of these characters. You know, he loves that kind of thing, but it's definitely interesting for if you don't know the history. It talks about where these characters originally came from, how they connect into Marvel Comics, and how he connected into that by coming to work as initially as Stan Lee's assistant, and how he talks about the original Invaders series, and how that came about, and how the Liberty Legion is made up of some timely heroes, and how they made an appearance in Marvel Premiere. So yeah, the finale of the first Invaders volume took place in 1942, and this issue takes place a couple weeks later. One other feature of it is that the Invaders have, whereas in that first series they spent a lot of time in Europe, they've come back to America to kind of keep an eye on things. And it seems like the Battle Axis, their goal is basically to try to get America out of the war. So yeah, I thought it was pretty enjoyable. Like I said, I wouldn't necessarily, I mean, those artistic qualities that we talked about that evoked the 90s, and they're not appealing to me, but like I said, I had an appreciation for the way that Hoover was able to sort of meld that, because obviously it was really popular at the time, and they Marvel probably wanted that. Mm-hmm. But I appreciate the way that he was able to adapt that in a way that felt more appropriate to the Invaders. So I think if someone saw the covers and was scared away from it, thinking that they just totally took the Invaders, like they Marvel and DC both took things to the no pun intended extreme at that time, with some properties where it just, if you're not into 90s comics, it took the enjoyment right out of it for you. This I think still evokes a lot of things about the Invaders that people might like, so at least this first issue does, so I think people would still probably like it.
I love the Invaders.
So the Blazing Skull. I like that guy. Mm-hmm. He's on the cover of 3 and 4.
Yeah, and I like, you know, I like that the way that Roy Thomas is able to bring in some of the lesser known Golden Age timely heroes, and pull from.
And that's always fascinating. I love that shit.
Mm-hmm. So, and I think he probably pulled from public domain characters. Just, you know, as Marvel's history isn't as packed with characters from the Golden Age as DC is.
Mm-hmm.
No, definitely not.
So,
where was the Black Terror?
Well, they had the the timely characters, but that's where the all that Wizard came from, and
yep. Right, yeah, they had the heroes. I don't know if they had as many villains, because I think a lot of times didn't they just fight Nazis and stuff?
Yeah, but same for
DC
for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Fighting Nazis, fighting crime bosses, that kind mm-hmm. of stuff.
Yeah,
true.
Yeah, even like I just finished reading that first Golden Age Batman omnibus, and I mean 90% of the stories are him fighting gangsters, and mobsters, and homegrown terrorists and stuff. And every once in a while, you get Joker and Hugo Strange and Catwoman. And that's about it.
And he kills them.
Just the first few issues.
Yeah, it doesn't last too long.
Yeah, I think about like by 12 issues in, it actually like makes a point to say that Batman doesn't kill. But it's, yeah, you know, it's only been 12 issues long, and he was killing people left and right in the first five or six issues.
Yeah, I like how in Detective Comics 27, he just like just flings dudes off roofs.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, we're on six stories up, whatever. It just throws people, just flings them over his shoulder off into the air.
It's not his problem.
See you later, dude.
Exactly. He's not killing them. He's just throwing them down.
Yeah, it's gravity that's killing
them. Right. Gravity really is to blame for that.
It's really gravity that's the menace. Uh-huh.
Yeah. That Marvel Unlimited is looking very tempting.
Isn't it getting more and more
appealing to me?
Appealing, yeah.
Especially losing the digital codes.
Does that make any sense whatsoever?
I
understand why they're
from
doing
what the article sounds like. Mm-hmm. Let's say if I buy like Avengers and I buy Uncanny X-Men or something like that, that I could get the same two codes for both books for the month of February. Because I'm going to get Old Man Logan and I'm going to get something else.
Well, because how many Marvel books do you buy, or does an Marvel average Marvel?
So I'm getting the same digital code over and over again.
Yeah, I just don't understand. I mean, I understand they're probably at some level trying to combat the fact that you have people buying the physical copy, and then a lot of people probably giving digital codes to somebody else. Right?
Oh, definitely. I think that's definitely why.
But at the same time, I don't understand what they think that
they're not. They make the article sound like they're benefiting us, but they're not.
Yeah, it's not. They're not.
Oh, of course.
They're giving us two copies instead of one, but it's two of the same copy.
And there are a lot of people that legitimately have their, which is what this was intended for, you know, have their paper copy. They may read their paper copy. They may not read their paper copy, and then they download their digital one, and they keep a nice handy digital library at all times. And now that's gone. Nobody, who's going to buy, you know, that stuff twice?
That's what I do for travel. I load up my iPad and bang.
It's part of the process. You know, like there's always people, the people who are dishonest are always going to ruin convenience for people who are honest. You know, yeah.
I don't think it's dishonest. There's no rule that says it says you have a digital code. It doesn't say you can not give it away.
No, you're right. That's true. Yeah, I guess that's the wrong choice of word in this circumstance, but
they're looking to gain an extra $3.99.
Yeah, like if I'm sure it's more than this, but just for easy numbers, say there's like 100 people who give away their codes. If only like 25 of those people decide, okay, since I'm not getting the free digital copy from my friend anymore, I'm going to go buy Marvel Comics.
Mm-hmm. Or Marvel Unlimited. Maybe they're driving them to that.
Yeah, but I mean, that makes more sense.
That makes more sense for a digital consumer to go that way, because they spend, maximum of $9 a month?
Yeah. That's
and it's usually less than that if you buy a yearly subscription.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like two issues.
And you can read what you want. I mean, Unlimited.
So no matter how it works out, if some of those people go to Marvel Unlimited, some people just start buying the issues themselves.
I don't think that's going to be the case, though.
Oh, but even if, like, my point is that, like, if 70 of those people just say, screw you, Marvel, like, I'm not reading anything, well, they weren't making money off those people anyway.
Anyway, Exactly.
So the 30% of people, or the 20%, it still is more money coming in.
Yeah, they'll end up. There's no doubt, Chris. They're going to end up getting some additional money, especially because I think it would be only fair to say we're not giving you two copies of the same book anymore. We're basically promoting our own line by what we want you guys to read. So because of the case, you don't have a choice. We're going to reduce our monthly books to $2.99. That would be fair, but they're never going to do that. So yeah, they're going to end up making some extra money, one way or the other by making this move. It's not going to be a one for one by any means.
Well, I think it could be that, or they could lose money, because what if it's those people that just say, screw it, I'm not going to buy a $3.99 book if I don't get a digital code anymore.
It's possible.
Maybe. I mean, I think they'll make money, but if it came to that, I think the only reason that they would introduce $2.99 books is if they truly, for a long stretch of time, ended up in number two position behind DC.
Oh yeah.
Because obviously, I mean, if DC could, if it was advantageous for DC to charge $3.99, they would. You know, they're not charging $2.99 because they love us. Nice. You know, yeah. To be nice. It's because they're the underdog, and it was a way of them strategically to try to gain some ground.
You know what DC needs to do now, though? They need to get off their ass and do a DC Unlimited. And how awesome would it be if they went ahead and put out, okay, at the same time that Marvel's doing this, we are now offering digital codes in all of our books, and they're still going to be $2.99.
Oh, they wouldn't do that.
No, but that would be amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, and I stopped holding my breath for DC Unlimited like 5 years ago.
I would get DC Unlimited probably in a heartbeat. I've always been, a Marvel person, especially in terms of older books, but I have so many of the older books where I don't have I'd be really interested to read like the old DC stuff, like Golden Age stuff.
Yeah. I mean, people have been talking about DC doing a similar service since Marvel came out with one.
Yeah, but why don't they?
Well, one, there's a number of different things I think contribute to it. One is Marvel Unlimited predates Comixology and other digital comic services. Like, Marvel Unlimited was around before iPads, and I mean, I had Marvel Unlimited back when you really only had the option of reading them on your PC.
Mm-hmm.
I remember sitting at my computer desk at the time for long periods of time and getting uncomfortable because I was like reading comics on my monitor, mm-hmm. you know? And I remember then there was a stretch of time where iPads existed and people started reading comics on there, and Marvel Unlimited hadn't made the move yet. People were like, are they even going to move it over there? Cause now it's like super convenient. And eventually they did, obviously. But right. I think it's a contributing factor that they had that infrastructure. Like, yeah, they had to port it to iOS and Android, but they had that infrastructure already in place. They had already made the decision to create the service before digital comics was really a thing, you know? Mm-hmm. And so they have a multi-prong situation going on where they are on Comixology. They do have digital sales on Comixology that I just look at and like, well, you know, whatever, because I already have access to those comics in Marvel Unlimited. So I think that's a big part of it. What if they hadn't done that? Like, if they were only thinking about it now, I don't know if they really would have put Marvel Unlimited out there. But I think it already exists, and it probably makes
it's probably making financial. I think it makes a lot. I think it's a growing. If I had to guess, it's growing. Yeah. And then they promote it like crazy. I mean, yeah. When a movie comes out, they're like, Marvel Unlimited, $6.99, come join. They promote it a lot more than they do their own books online.
Yeah, and they probably, like, whatever initial startup cost it was to get that service created and all the infrastructure set up to where it is now, where they can just update it and add content to it,
mm-hmm.
was paid off a long time ago, you know? And so I wonder if for DC, I mean, this is all speculation on my part because I would love to see it too. So, but I wonder if DC is just like, well, we're, you know, they got into the game once later with digital comics and stuff. So they may just be like, well, there's no reason for us to, it's not worth it to us to create a service like that. We'll just keep putting our comics on Comixology and having sales and stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I don't say that you're
I think there's politicals between like trying to keep stores open too, between both of them. Like they don't want to lose the paper print for whatever reason. They could, and people would move too, because if they decided to go to a digital thing, people would go digital, even the people that are freaking out.
But
they would go because they want to read their Spider-Man. They want to read their
Mike, I you're right to like the extent that like I would definitely still buy some comic books. I wouldn't buy anywhere near the number that I buy now. Because part of it is collecting. And like literally collecting.
But you could still do that. I mean,
it's not the same.
You could do that for the rest of your life, buying historical comic books.
Old. Yeah. No,
we'd still have our collectability. We just want to have to keep our current stuff on digital.
Yeah.
Or collected edition, whatever they did.
I wouldn't like to see that at all. I'm sure you wouldn't either, but.
Well, I'm not for that at all.
Yeah.
But, I would go with it. I tell you right now, if I had to get my DC books digitally, I would go over. I'll convert when I have to.
But I'm thinking of
doing it though for Marvel. I really am.
No, you're not. Are you kidding?
Yeah, I'm gonna go to Marvel Unlimited and maybe get like the characters that I've always collected, like Daredevil, FF, Avengers, Captain America, get the books that I'm always getting, but then everything else will fall on Marvel Unlimited.
You heard it here first, folks.
Mike is going digital. That's where I fell a long time ago, because I just couldn't like justify the cost of like okay, I have to wait 6 months to read these new Marvel issues.
Mm-hmm.
Is having to wait 6 months like really like versus the cost of the issues? Like I just couldn't justify paying the money just to read it 6 months earlier. Yeah. I mean, that leaving that said, like a lot of times I just don't even keep up with new Marvel stuff anyways. But the cost of, like you said, Mike, the cost of Marvel Unlimited is so low. I get the yearly subscription and it literally like works out to like $5 a month. So I don't even feel bad if I go like a couple months without even really using it that much.
Yeah, you could freaking read like 10 books 1 month and you've already paid it off. I mean,
yeah. So, I mean, it's so cheap. I just don't even, and it balances out because like I go through, and I can see it cause I keep track of what I read. Like, you know, I've gone through quite a few months now where I haven't really used the app much at all. But last summer I went through like a 2 month period where I was in the mood to read, and I read tons of Marvel, you know, and, mm-hmm. and you could just stretch that out over time. But it's nice to have that convenience of like this huge library. Even if you do, like I think at $5 a month, if you do the yearly rate, especially when they have it on sale.
Yeah, how can you beat that?
I feel like why not just have that access as a comic fan to that library, yeah. even if you do still buy Marvel books?
Right, because then you have the convenience of not having to go to your long box to go find the first appearance of Joe Blow. You could just
yeah, that too. Yeah, even if you have the books in storage or something like that, don't feel like out or whatever. But also, I mean, what you said also about the comic industry and retailers and stuff might tie into what I said about when Marvel Unlimited was launched as well, because when they came out with it, like there wasn't the sensitivity of retailers to digital comics wasn't there yet, because that was all you had. It was like them and when CrossGen was around, CrossGen had a service like this too, where you could read comics digitally, but it was like you didn't own them, and you know, there just wasn't, Comixology wasn't around, so real retailers weren't as sensitized to publishers doing digital comics, you know. Mm-hmm. And now
CrossGen did all the groundbreaking risky stuff.
They did do a lot, yeah.
And then formed the success stories for the other companies. They did the pathfinding.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
They did the hard part. That's
they
the bold.
They took the risks.
That's the bold stuff. Like you take the risk and you could fail, but you're bold about it.
So yeah, I don't know if retailers noticed this or cared or was worried by Marvel Unlimited at the time, and you know, maybe there was, but I don't think they were as sensitive to it as they are now. And I think maybe if DC came out with something like that now, like they'd be pissing off a lot more people. People would take more of a notice to it.
Yeah, so. I don't know. It's all people do. They make decisions because it's a bottom line. That's what.
Yeah.
And if it proves that they're not making money, they'll do something else. They'll go the other way.
Yeah.
But it does, I mean, I have to say, like, for DC's, as far as DC goes, like, I spent a lot more money on DC comics because I want access to the stories, you know? Like, that's what I collect in back issues because I want to read the stories, you know? Mm-hmm. Some of it's for collecting for me, but it's not, most of it's just because I want access to the books to read them. And it's either paper or digital, but one way or the other, like, I have to spend the money. I don't have a $5 a month subscription option. So, you know, maybe they do make more money by not having it. I don't know. They can make more money off of me. I know that. Mm-hmm. So, anyway.
Yeah, I think a lot of tangent. People read, you know, buy the books just for the stories and just to be able to read them. I don't know a lot of people anymore that do a lot of, like, collecting. You know, I mean, there's some, like, Chris Campbell does for Batman, right? And then I think, you know, Mike and myself, we do a lot of actual, like, collecting. Mm-hmm. But I don't know a lot of people that just collect.
The most people I know collect.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know people that just read it and then toss it.
Well, I don't mean that they throw it away. I mean that that's just not their motivation.
Well, collecting is not my motivation. Reading is it's secondary.
It's part of it, though.
It's the secondary goal. Primary is to read.
Yeah. Reading is
way, way more important.
Well, no. I don't think I'm getting my point across, or I'm not being clear, because obviously that's mine too. I mean, I want to read the stories first, but I guess what I mean is they don't really, like, to give you an example, like Martin, like, reads a ton of stuff in trade now because he doesn't need to get the single issues. He wants to read the story. Do you know what I'm saying?
But let me tell you this, if you're talking collectability, I'm finding that collected editions go up way more in price because of the print runs and because of obscurity and demand
than
the single issues.
you got a point there.
There are some trades that are ridiculously priced. I mean, they're so high because they're 1,000 or 2,000 print run.
I know. Well, I wanted to get that Death of a Prince Aquaman thing.
That's why I'm going for this epic collection. I'm going all in, man. Every freaking one.
With my new Teen Titans Omnibus Volume 1.
Yeah, I bought it. You got the bronze ones coming next.
And then I sold it. I sold it once it went out of print.
Yeah.
And bought. And with the money, because I made more than I bought it for.
I bet you did.
Well, because I got it for 50% off to begin with.
Right, so it's like if it's $100 or $125, you get it for half. And then you sell it for double.
And I sold it for more than what like the cover price was on it. And then I used that money. I already had like New Teen Titans like number 3 through whatever was in there. So I, anyways, and to have the single issues, so I sold it and I bought DC Comics Presents 26 and New Teen Titans number 1 and number 2.
Now what I mean, that was amazing. That's an amazing trade-off.
But and so that's where, like, I think I understand what you're saying, Rob, is that like my, I'm definitely a reader,
mm-hmm.
but I'm, and then I am somewhat of a collector, whereas like it's not even like one company, it's like specified, like I can easily read those early Teen Titans. It was just a favorite of mine, so it's cool for me to have them. Right. And that's when you're talking in that language, like, it's cool to have this, you know, saying something like that as like a collecting thing. But yeah, for me, it's like specified to Flash, you know, or and Wonder Woman to a second
yeah, Wonder
extent.
Woman. Yeah, Wonder Woman is a good example for you. It'd be like the, just a couple kinds that we've gone to together.
Yeah,
you
know? Like I like to have a little something to work on because I do like collecting to an extent.
Mm-hmm.
I like, you know, getting a run of something and like getting those last couple issues and filling it out. But I keep it limited, you know. And so, Mike, for you, like, I know number one for you is reading, and that's your primary, like, that's what you care about the most. But I also know, like, that you do enjoy some collecting aspects of it because you, like, will talk about how, you know, you have this title back to this date and or you only need, like, this issue and that issue, and you'll go and seek that out and be like, I completed this title or I completed that title. And it's like, I know if push came to shove, like, it would always be more important to you to read the stories if you had to choose. But, like, I can see that you, like, get enjoyment from the collective aspect of it as well.
Yeah, and see, that's what I was kind of thinking, too,
also,
like, when I said
it's a
that.
It's a collective, it's fun, but at the same time, it's a disorder, it's like a mental disorder.
That's when it goes too far.
It's not a good one to have.
It is a good one to have.
It is, but it's costly.
But you know what? You're not spending the money on you know booze and whores. So this is a good hobby to have.
Yeah, that's a good hobby to have. But I think, you know, especially you, Rob, what I mean by that. It's a blessing, and it's sometimes it could be a curse, because you look at this and you're like, okay, I need to get this, okay, and it gets expensive. You mm-hmm. buy stuff, you see holes in your collection, and you have like this hoarding disorder where you want to get it, and you spend a lot.
And I think we can partially thank Comic Base for that.
Well, yeah.
Because it's right there in black and white.
Yeah, it tells you right off what you're missing.
Why is this missing?
Yeah,
but I think it's like with any hobby, you just have to know how to manage it, you know, and how to keep it under
control. Some people, like, there's a couple people I'd like to get on the other show that I do, the collector's one. But there's a couple of interesting people that I know that love to read the comics and then sell them too. So that's a whole new aspect to enjoying comics and then getting rid of them.
Yeah, I don't understand that at all.
I want to understand that.
Yeah, because I wouldn't be able to do that. It would hurt me to do that.
It would hurt me right now to do this, but
yeah,
I'm getting old, man. I mean,
it's fine. You're not that old.
Well, at some point you gotta cut the ties.
Oh no, never.
Unless you want to be burned like a Viking with them, I mean.
Well, you know what the thing is?
I started doing that with my new comics.
What'd you say, Chris?
I started doing that with my new comics.
What?
Selling them.
Oh, I thought you meant burning them.
No. No, the heat's still on. I haven't had to burn my comics for warmth or anything.
That is a good thing.
If it's Batman, I feel like burning it, but that's...
See, here's my thing. Now that I've got kids, it's like I tell my wife all the time. I'm like, when I go, I said they can do whatever they want. They can go ahead and just dump them all, or they can do as much or as little work as they want to get money for them, I'll note, you know, I have notes in terms of what is valuable and what's not, so they kind of know. But at that point, you know, once I'm gone, I don't care. They can do whatever they want with them.
Once you go pee-pee?
Huh?
Once you go pee-pee?
No. When I leave this mortal coil.
Oh, no, I know what you mean. Yeah, I got to a point where I realized if I ever reread the new comics, it'd be so long from then that I wouldn't even care if I got like them digitally or in a trade at that point.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I was not going to reread them anytime soon. And with a lot of them, I probably would never reread them. Right. And rather than have them take up space, I trade them into, not all of them, because I can't, whatever ones my comic shop is willing to take, I trade them back and get most of my money back in trade value and just get more comics.
I find I get worse with time. I buy more and more, and now I'm into collected editions, and fuck.
Mike, if for some reason you start needing to get rid of yours, please keep me in mind.
Well, you just have to balance what you're comfortable with, you know? Like I said, it's not just comics. It's like any kind of hobby. Like, you have to manage it. Sometimes you realize...
Well, I manage it. I'm not stupid with money.
Yeah.
I know what I can afford.
You're not spending money.
Space-wise, I'm kind of stupid.
Me too. Yeah.
Space-wise, I am not practical.
Mm-mm. I've got no space for anything.
I'm either going to have to move into a... I don't know, 4,500 square foot house or something, or start doing storage unit, but something's going to have to crack.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's part of it for me too, is I just don't have much space.
Yeah.
So,
it's tough.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Rob, you want to tell us what you read this week?
Sure. Yeah. So I have, this time around, I've got a couple of them, and I'll start. It's going to be a Superman day for me. So I apologize also if, you know, being new to this, if you guys have already covered any of these, because I really don't know.
We've accidentally recovered the same books before too. So
yeah, and yeah, we don't even know it until after the show.
Like, that sounds really familiar. But today I'm going to cover Superman number 11. I hope it hasn't been covered recently. I mean, Superman Annual 11. I hope that hasn't been covered recently.
No, actually, I just actually looked through what Superman books. Uh-huh. That's the search on, not that you have to do this, but the search on the Geek Brunch page actually works pretty good. And I repeated myself almost a couple times, and I literally repeated something that Mike had read like,
yeah, that was like a Marvel team up that I was like, man.
I remember listening.
I wasn't even that long, I remember
this book.
Yes. Yes. I remember, because I think I listened to both of those episodes. I'm like, it sounds familiar to me too. And then you finally said something like, and I'm like, oh, yeah. That's why.
I think we did cover it, but not here. I think I covered this with Daryl or something.
Yeah.
This is this one's important because it's if you're reading Trinity right now, it's an important book.
Yeah, yeah. So I think I've read this in, I think it was in his 75-year collection as well. I'm not sure. But anyhow, Annual number 11, it's by Alan Moore and Dave Gibbons. I think this is the only work they've done together. So anyhow, it's got on the cover, it's got Superman wrapped up in some sort of weird vine plant flower thing with Mongol behind him, and got Batman, Robin, and Wonder Woman in the background. So what the premise is that it's Superman's birthday, and Wonder Woman and Batman and Robin come to the Fortress of Solitude to give him some birthday presents. And this Robin is Jason Todd, very, very new as being Robin, first time meeting Wonder Woman. I think it was the first time meeting Superman as well. So he just had gotten started. But anyhow, they enter the fortress and they see that Superman is just standing upright, paralyzed, with this weird, like, vine plant creature wrapped around his chest. And what it turns out is that he's in this, like, dream state where this flower, this plant, is supposed to, it's trying to give him his greatest desires. So you see that he's back on Krypton, married and has children. And his father is very angry. He's been kicked out of the Science Council. He's been discredited because he had said that Krypton was going to explode, and it never happened. And it's gotten to the point where he's actually joined these, like, kind of crazy extremists. Sort of, is it Rao, or I'm not sure how to pronounce it. R-A-O.
Yeah, the god Krypton, yeah. Rao.
Wow, yeah. So what ends up happening is, as Batman, Robin, and Wonder Woman are trying to figure out what, you know, first of all, how this got to him, because it looks like it had been in a different, like, box, like as if somebody else had sent him a present. Mongol shows up behind them, and he starts talking to them, saying that, yes, he presented this through a teleportation channel to Superman. When he opened it, he was this vine thing wrapped around him to give him his greatest desire, thereby basically just paralyzing him and keeping him in this state forever. Mongol then goes on to chat with him some more, and Wonder Woman attacks. So they start beating each other up. We cut back to Superman in his dream state. And now he's at the hospital, and it turns out his cousin Kara has been critically injured in by an attack with some rioters, because people are very upset with the House of El at this point. They are not popular. One of the things that Jor-El created was the Phantom Zone projector, and people at this point on Krypton are considering that, like, cruel and unusual punishment. And people are saying that those people should be released from the Phantom Zone. And her, as a person from the House of El, was beat up by a bunch of protesters. And she's in bad shape. They don't expect her to live. So,
dun, dun, dun.
So Super, or I'm sorry, not Superman. Wonder Woman and Mongo are still attacking each other. They're putting holes all through the Fortress of Solitude. Punching each other. She gets this huge gun, shoots him, doesn't really, like, have hardly any effect at all. Meanwhile, Batman and Robin are trying to figure out how to remove this vine, because it seems to have grown not just on him, but actually, like, digging through his costume into him. And they're afraid if they take it off that something's going to happen to him. So in Superman's dream state, he's with his son named Van, and they're trying to get out of the city because of all these rioters, and they're going to go to his wife's father's house out of the main city. But instead, he decides to travel to the Kandor crater. There's nothing there but a huge empty crater. And he's like an archaeologist. That's what he was working on in the past. He was digging through that crater, and he's looking around, and he says, you know, he seems like there's something wrong. He's got a bad feeling, and so on and so forth. And then he's finally saying all this stuff to his son too. He's like, you know, this kind of feels like I don't think you're even real. And that was enough that it's like he's trying to fight against this, and the vines around Superman start to give a little. So Batman tries to start pulling on him, and sure enough, he's able to get the vine to release off of Clark. And by pulling it really hard, he kind of falls backwards, and the vine then grabs him and takes over. It puts him in the dream state. So Batman now is reliving his origin story, where Joe Chill is going to shoot Martha and Thomas. But in this, Joe Chill misses, and Thomas knocks Joe Chill down and grabs the gun. And the police take him away, and Batman's just content. He's happy. And so Robin's freaking out. He's trying to figure out, how am I going to get this off Batman, where Superman awakes and remembers that it was Mongo and screams out his name and then flies off right through the wall to find Mongo. So he runs into Mongo. He starts fighting him. And it's at this point, Wonder Woman has been beaten. And she's just collapsed on the ground. Robin grabs these huge gloves, these huge gauntlets that Mongo had been using to handle the vines. And Robin starts pulling on them with these gauntlets. He's able to get it off of Batman and goes running up to the second floor, which is where Superman and Mongo are now fighting. And now finally, at that point, Mongo's got Superman pretty much on the ropes. They crash back down to the first floor just as Robin finally gets up to the second floor. And he's like, are you kidding me? So he goes to the hole in the ceiling just as Mongo's pretty much got Clark knocked out. And he drops the alien plant vine thing down on Mongo, and it wraps around Mongo. So, of course, now Mongo's got his greatest desires, and he believes that he's totally destroyed Robin as he swings down to the first floor, just vaporizes him, and that he rips off Clark's head and sticks it on a pike and everything else. And so he's just totally collapsed, frozen. And now Batman, Robin, Superman, and Wonder Woman are recovered, and they start giving Superman his presents. And Wonder Woman gave him a replica bottle of the city of Kandor. Now he says, oh, thanks. And he grabs it and then super speed runs and takes I'm assuming it's the real one and puts it away. And so she doesn't see it. So I don't know what's up with that at this point in continuity. If Kandor had been enlarged and then had been shrunk down again and she didn't know it. And so she gave him a replica. I don't know what it means that there was one already in the Fortress of Solitude that he had to hide so she didn't see it. I that's lost on me. I don't know if either one of you know anything about that, but
Kandor has always been in the Fortress of Solitude.
Yeah, but so I don't know. I mean, she actually says, she's like, it's an exact duplicate of the Bottle City of Kandor to replace the real one, which was enlarged. The Paradise Island gemsmiths made it. You need X-ray and microscopic vision to really appreciate it.
Now, the one that I know of had real people in it.
Right, yeah.
There were people and living in it. Says, that's Nightwing and Flamebird were heroes of Kandor.
Oh, why, Diana, that's just... And he goes flying and trades them out. And then he says, that's just what I wanted. And so it's obvious there's already one there. So I don't know if at some point it was enlarged. I mean, that's what she's saying. But
I think there have been stories in the past where, like pre-crisis maybe or whatever, where that
yeah, it is pre-crisis. It
did get enlarged. So maybe they did. Maybe it was a recent storyline one of those times. I think. Yeah. I mean, that story has been done at least once, I think.
Yeah, so that's possible.
Yes, maybe that is what it is.
Batman and Robin.
This is pre-crisis, but they've kind of used it in canon. Yeah. I mean, even at post-crisis.
Batman and Robin gave him a new breed of rose called the Krypton, but it got smushed. And he's like, that's all right, Bruce. Maybe it's for the best after everything that happened to him with a different plant. And then they have a quick one-page epilogue of Mongo's. He's just like, he's gone from planet to planet to planet in his war world, just conquering and destroying everything. And like, there's one scene where he's just sitting on a throne and the robotic Brainiac, not the green Brainiac, is just like kissing his hand. And you see you can make out a couple other people. Like, I could see that Adam Strange is a person lining up to pay him homage. And looks like even John Jones is towards the back. So he's just totally content thinking that he's conquered the entire universe. And of course he's still trapped by the plant, and that's the end of the story. But I've read that one probably 3 or 4 times. I think that's a really good one-shot story.
That's cool. The connection there when you're mentioning Trinity is obvious. I didn't realize that the story had that connection, or I didn't realize there was anything in that Trinity story that was evoking a earlier story.
Yeah. Well, did you read it, Trinity? Where are you at?
I think I've only read a couple issues, maybe two.
Well, you know that Mercy's involved, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, as you get further, you'll see even more linkage.
Oh, that's cool.
And then if you watched Justice League Unlimited, there was a Black Mercy episode. And also Black Mercy showed up in the Supergirl TV show season one. So.
Yeah, I guess I just didn't know how well that Trinity story was connecting back into other stuff.
So well,
that's cool. That's cool.
It's its own continuity with the exception of Superman.
Yeah, I guess I just mean like
it was evoking it. Yeah. Yeah, I mean they're playing with other concepts, like Poison Ivy is like a big deal with Mercy, right? I mean, she's a game changer now. She's like she's always been pretty dang powerful, like not Swamp Thing level, but she's pretty powerful. But with this, she's even more of an adversary, if you will. But she's also had instances where she's been good. So it's harder to predict what she'll do as opposed to a lot of the other villains.
I mean, her motivations.
Yeah, her motivations are totally different. Yeah. And she has shown to be sympathetic to humanity in the past.
Mm-hmm. Did you just read that Batgirl issue, number 6, I think it was?
Oh, yeah, Plants on a Plane. Like, yeah, I like to talk about it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was pretty – I enjoyed it quite a bit.
Yeah. That was a little bit of a more lighthearted version, I thought, of Poison Ivy. Not to the extreme of Harley Quinn, but kind of in that vein.
She had glimpses of, like, I'll just take this plane down if if you're going to kill this prehistoric plant, but then reasoning and logic prevailed. So
yeah.
Well, my choice is I've been in the Marvel realm lately, and I'll probably continue to stay there for a while because I'm reading so much freaking current DC that I'd rather explore the Marvel past. So my choice is Defenders number 92, and both of my books have something in common. They have the Son of Satan in common with the other books that I've always liked Damon Hellstrom. Matter of fact, in college I went and bought every single Son of Satan and Marvel Spotlight, everything that he had appeared in, and I had already had the full run of Defenders. I love the Defenders, and Barb, you're not sneezing, but you're blowing your nose.
I like it when Daryl tells you to have her be quiet. You're doing the Lord's work.
He tells her to shut up.
We're doing the Lord's work here.
So this story is by J.M. DeMatteis, Don Perlin, and Pablo Marcus. So Don Perlin, I think, is the artist, and Pablo is inking him. And this is just a really cool story because it takes off several episodes ago. I talked about a Marvel team-up with Spider-Man and Nighthawk, where he was a drunk driver and he killed his fiance and then tried to hide it, him and his father, and then found out his fiance was alive again. Well, he's still dealing with ramifications from that. So he's like coming to Doctor Strange's house and he's like coming to complain. You know, he's like, I destroyed my dad's company. I'm no good. Blah, blah, blah. He's got a lot of problems, Nighthawk. Like he's like mentally needs help. Like, he needs a psychologist. and Doctor Strange is there to help him, but he's also there to help the Hulk, and the Hulk is in the Sanctum Sanctorum playing with action figures, and I like when Hulk is stupid. He cracks me up. He's actually playing with action figures with Clea while Nighthawk is whining, and then all of a sudden there's blank panels, like realities going out of sync, and Doctor Strange, did you feel that? You know, what's going on? And it turns out this is a concept I really love. Like, I love when J.M. DeMatteis does, like, Phantom Stranger and all kinds of other stuff, because he deals with, like, really larger-than-life concepts that make you think. And in the Marvel Universe, there's this character called Eternity, and Eternity is what we live on. Like, he encompasses reality. And, sometimes Eternity gets lonely. and in order to solve his problem, he lets pieces of himself go out to different parts of the universe that he is part of him, just so he can live as somebody on at that level, like turn himself into a human, an alien. So he gets lonely. He breaks himself up into gajillion pieces and sends these pieces out. Well, on Earth, three of these pieces don't want to reunite with him, which could cause the end of the world and the whole world to destruct. And Eternity tells Doctor Strange this, and he's like, if you have 1 hour to help me get these other three bodies, or we'll all cease to exist. Everything will go away. So Doctor Strange calls upon Submariner. He calls upon here. The Hulk and Nighthawk are already there. He calls upon Hellcat, Damian Hellstrom, the son of Satan, and he's like, "I need your help." He even goes to the Silver Surfer, and the Silver Surfer is on like a mountaintop contemplating humanity, and he's like, "I can't help you right now. I'm depressed." He's an oddball.
The Silver Surfer is pretty emo.
He is so emo.
Would he get along well with Batman? Would you say? Mike?
Oh God, I don't want to get there.
I know,
but I'll say I want to tell you something offline.
Okay.
Have you read the new one?
Which 14?
Yeah.
No, it hasn't come yet.
Oh God, help me. we'll talk about that after you read it.
Okay.
Because there's something in there that just totally takes me out of the story. But yeah, he's. So Silver Surfer's a really powerful being, but man, he's an oddball. Namor hates to work with Doctor Strange, but he knows, like, hey, if I'm going to lose Atlantis because of this situation, I'm going to go help him. And Hellstrom is already aware of it because he's a supernatural being. He's fascinating. He hates his father so much. He hates Lucifer. He hates Satan. He's such an oddball character, and he's hand in hand with Ghost Rider at the same time that the Ghost Rider title is being launched, which I'll talk about later. But there's three entities, so he breaks the team up into Son of Satan and Hellcat, Hulk and Nighthawk, and Submariner and Valkyrie. She's also called upon, and they have to go find these three individuals, and there's these entities and mystical beings that are preventing them from reuniting with Eternity. Well, it turns out that these beings love their humanity so much they don't want to reunite with Eternity. So they're creating these constructs to fight off, and they just want the world to end. And it turns out that they actually defeat every single defender except for Nighthawk, who's in deep depression. And Doctor Strange comes in his astral projection. He's like, Kyle, I need you to wake up. You're the only one that could help. Look to your heart. And then Kyle just says, hey, you love humanity so much. Well, do you realize what's going to happen if you don't reunite? You're going to kill everyone that you've loved on Earth. And they actually, because of his reasoning, they reunite with Eternity. And they're back to normal. And then Richman is back into deep depression. But it's really a fascinating concept because eternity is like everything, and then he gets lonely.
Yeah, so but he's got a terrific cape.
Yeah, he's.
Yeah, I always like the appearance of Eternity. He's just kind of.
It's like every the universe.
Yeah, he's got it's like a starscape within the boundaries of a shape.
Yeah, and so there's some Hulk dialogue that's just I love Hulk when he's. Hulk confused when dumb magician talk about eternity and tiny eternities, but Hulk not confused now. Snowmen smash people, make them scared. You know, he's just like, he's like a kid in that body. And they control him like they would try to control a four-year-old or a three-year-old. And I find that fascinating in itself. Because they have to reason with him like they would reason with a child. And I forgot to say that while this is going on, Clea and Doctor Strange, they didn't break up into the teams. They tried to keep Eternity like into one. He was dissipating, and they're using their powers to try to keep him together long enough for them to do the rest of the Defenders to do their job. But really good story. I have a full run of Defenders. It was one of the first. The Champions and the Defenders were one of the first teams that I collected and completed the runs on to make me the collector I am today. So I'll always hold the Defenders and the Champions really close to heart. But yeah, it's good. It's good stuff. Well, Chris, you're up.
Okay. Well, I'll take off of Rob's cue and talk about some Superman myself.
Well, we're gonna have a lot of Superman today.
Yeah, this is why I had checked the website, because I know I've talked about some random Volume 1 Superman before and wasn't sure what issues I talked about, because I can't remember where I got this issue or how long I've had it. I was pretty sure I hadn't read it yet. I think it's a fairly recent. I think I got it last year somewhere. But it's issue 325. A story called The Super Sellout of Metropolis. And the cover of this issue is a complete spoiler. Like, what happens on the cover doesn't happen until the very end of the issue. I just thought that's interesting. If I won't describe the cover for that reason, but if somebody wants to look at the cover, I thought it was kind of funny that once I actually finally got to that happening in the issue, it was at the end. But anyway, the beginning of the story is pretty intriguing. Where so this is the time period where Clark Kent and Lois and all of them, they work for Galaxy Communications, and it starts off with Superman outside of UBC, U as in umbrella, a competitor of GBC, Galaxy Broadcasting, that UBC welcomes Superman to its lineup of superstars. And someone's got a copy of the Daily Planet. It says, Superman signs exclusive contract with UBC. And Lois and Lana and a couple other people... or Perry's there, and then you guys might be familiar with him, but I'm not. But there's another guy there that what do they call him?
The sports guy.
It might Lombard. Be he's got a blue jacket on. So I'm sure he wears the same thing all the time. That makes sense.
What's his name?
I thought I could find it, but I'll try to find it. But okay. Anyways, he's not real important. They're just, the point is that they're watching from nearby, and Lana says, I'm gonna.
This is 325, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Lana's gonna interview Superman, to ask what's going on with the fact that he's gone over to UBC and he's sold out, and the guy whose name I can't remember, he says, you know, I should have known better than to believe in Superman's reputation. No one could be such a goody-two-shoes. And I guess this proves it. But Lois is holding out hope, of course. So, you know, some friend you are, like, can you give him the benefit of the doubt? Probably this is some kind of hoax or some plot of a villain, you know. Lana criticizes her for grabbing at straws, and she says if it's just sour grapes, if Superman had come to work for Galaxy Broadcasting System, then they would all be super excited and happy. But since he's gone to the other company, they're calling him a sellout. So Lana interviews him briefly, and Superman's like, yeah, there's a escalator clause in my contract guaranteeing me a 15% raise after 1 year. And Lana asks him how much United Broadcasting Company is paying. And he's like, sorry, Miss Lang, I'm not at liberty to discuss it. Let's just say that my salary is in her six figures. So unusual behavior for Superman. And
wow, that's a good salary.
Yeah, especially in 1978.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wait, so, whose figure? This is Superman's or
that's
Clark's?
That's Superman's. That's okay. That's Superman. Yeah, they don't know. You know, they think they're interviewing Superman.
Six figures. My goodness.
For United Broadcasting Company. So obviously, this is one of those surprise beginnings that then they can show you how this happened. And we backtrack to 11:45 on the night before last. And an editor's note lets us know that this is following up on what happened in the previous issue, where apparently Superman fought the Atomic Skull and Titano. And Atomic Skull has been subdued, but Superman is going to try to find some of his operatives that are at large. He's got Surprise on his side, and right now a woman named Dr. Janet Clyburn is at Skull's complex watching over Atomic Skull's. He's knocked out, basically, and they want to work at getting Titano back to where he belongs. Superman's actually not flying. He's actually in his supermobile, which is always kind of funny, like Superman who can fly and is pretty invulnerable, like actually using a spaceship.
Is it that spaceship with the two punch like fists in the front?
I don't think it does. It's just like a little. You're right. It does.
They made a toy of that back in the day, and I've always wanted that because I love that ship. That's how he could go into space, and it had two fists.
Oh, I remember this. Yeah. I had a little thing like a matchbox car thing.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, do you still have it?
I might. I'll have to take a look. Yeah.
See, this is one of those toys that has eluded me, but I would love to have it. I have Superman Spinball Pinball. I used to love to play that. I still have it.
Yeah, it's pretty funny looking. I mean, for the most part, it looks like just like a little blue spaceship, but now you mention it, it does have like little white fists on the sides.
On the sides.
So he's flying along in that, and then he's confused because he was on his way to... sorry, Dusty. I dropped something on my cat. Freaked out. He's on his way to Metropolis.
Hopefully it wasn't hot coffee.
No. That was my cell phone. It slipped off my leg. Yeah, if that was the case, you would have heard, wow.
Oh, that'd be fine.
Oh, yeah, real hilarious, Rob. Spill hot coffee on my cat. So anyway, he's over the suburbs instead of downtown, and he looks at the clock, and he realizes he's lost 12 minutes of time. So he goes up to his Fortress of Solitude and checks himself out. Well, meanwhile, he's kind of delaying getting back, obviously, and that doctor is just standing there, and Atomic Skull is knocked out, and his wrists are bound. But other than that, like, she's just there by herself, and one of a spaceship arrives, and one of the Atomic Skull's cronies comes out, is about to shoot her, and Superman shows up just in time to take the blast in his chest and save her. But yeah, he explains that he was delayed because he had to go find out what's going on. He's talking to her. He's like, "Well, that's over at last. The Skull Organization has been smash, and she's like, "What's wrong?" And then, as she's watching, all of a sudden he like flies in up to the air and then down. He starts chiseling into the floor of the space, or not, but this like base or whatever that they're in. He starts chiseling away into the floor, and he creates this huge message that says, "Stop the violence on GBS TV shows." She's like, "What?" He was too busy etching some kind of crazy protest against TV violence in the floor to stop the Skullers? That doesn't make sense. And he's like passed out and confused. He's like, and then he comes to again. He says, "Forgives the stupid question, but what am I doing over here?" And so he's, of course, blacked out again. So then this whole sort of thing happens again, where, well, he gets to finally figure out how he blacked out in the first time, when he comes along and he sees that there's glowing writing in the sky. It turns out later, like, the way that he did this was he, you know, used the exhaust from the supermobile to write the letters, and then he made them radioactive somehow with his vision, so you could see him at light at night, and it says GBS violates fairness doctrine. So Superman's blacking out and protesting Galaxy Broadcasting System. Meanwhile, Lana and Lois have kind of a little bit of a like nasty back and forth when Lois confronts Lana. Apparently, Lana in the previous issue, she pulled a stunt so that she would get the scoop on the Titano issue, so that Lana could get the story. And Lois says, "I had to pull your flaming red hair by its mousy brown roots."
Fighting words.
Yeah, Lana's like, "Oh, I didn't know you even cared about anything these days except for Superman." So Lois shows her this ring, like, "Don't hold your breath, sister, just take a squint at this." "A ring? It's a present from Superman? You got it. If I were still a giggling teeny bopper, I'd say we were going steady, so lay off." So it's like, oh man, this is written by Martin Pasco. I thought, man, this is not dialogue that was written by a woman. but it's pretty funny. So Superman and the Doctor, they want to send Titano back to where he's from. Superman has this device that he found inside of Atomic Skull's. And then Miss Kyle attacks.
Now, who is that?
From outer space. It's Miss Kyle.
That's the super fists that are grabbing a squishy bubble out of the Superman ship.
Mabel's on the podcast. Hi, Mabel. Can I have this? What is this? Can I have Miss Cow? Oh, I got Miss Cow. How about you find a non-squeaky toy? Okay, we'll put Miss Cow over there. She's got a lot of choices that are squeaky, though. Yeah, there you go.
I think go all of your Harley's choice. Toys have a squeaky
go
thing.
Go get your bacon chew. Kara's distracting her. She's got this chew thing you can chew on that apparently is bacon flavored. That Kara's aunt got her. But anyways, after Miss Cow attacked, Superman got this device from inside of the Atomic Skull's ship. And it's this kind of, you turn this dial, and then when you see the planet you want to send something to, you pull the trigger and it sends it to that planet, apparently. So he uses that to shoot Titano back to where, to his home planet. After that, Superman blacks out again. He was taking the doctor back to Star Labs. So hopefully he got her there before he blacked out, because he blacks out when he's flying, and next thing he knows, it says he must have gone blank after leaving Star, so it looks like he got her there okay. But he wakes up in this forest, and this is my favorite one, because he wakes up and he looks at the nearby cliffside, and he has used his heat vision to write Morgan Edge as a tightwad in the face of the hillside. So it's like, all right, this is going too far. I got to get to the bottom of this. He's got to report to work. So he goes to the Galaxy Broadcasting System as Clark Kent, you know, and Clark Kent, Lana and Lois show him that somebody wrote GBS, you know, that sky message. And he's like, interesting. You know, obviously, he already knows about it, but he pretends not to know. Oh, he actually, and he says, but Rao only knows what else I did while I was out. There's invoking the Kryptonian god there, as mentioned previously on this podcast. So this is when somebody comes in. Oh, it's Jimmy. Jimmy Olsen comes in. He says, this morning, Superman signed an exclusive contract to appear on the UBC network. And Clark's like, oh, man, I don't remember doing that. But that would explain all this graffiti that I've been doing. He said, I wish I could have done this by more ethical means, but he has to actually break into UBC's offices. And sure enough, he finds a contract with his genuine signature on it, signing contract with the company. And then out of nowhere, as seen on the cover, this giant, strange sort of fist made up of black particles comes out of nowhere and punches him, knocks him into the file cabinets. And he punches the fist, and it causes the particles to dissipate. But then a voice comes over, a loudspeaker, speaking to him, and he's attacked again from behind by the villain Blackrock.
I'm not familiar.
I was not either, but apparently he had appeared before. So the man that's talking to him over the loudspeaker is Peter Silverstone, and apparently in the past he had used the Blackrock character. He had actually taken mental control of someone, and used that someone as Blackrock, but I guess since using another person is what caused his plans to go wrong before, this time he's got an invention where he can create Blackrock out of these black particles and control them by remote control. So it's a cliffhanger ending, unfortunately. So we flip at the end, we flip back to the beginning of the story where Superman is being interviewed. Clearly he's even more so under control of Peter Silverstone. And he's telling Lana at the end of this interview that his first program for them will be a live half-hour interview in which he'll reveal his secret identity to the nation.
Oh, boy.
So, apparently in issue 326, a story called $1 Million a Minute. When I did look into BlackRock a little bit, it seems like Peter Silverstone, like, I don't know if he works for that other broadcasting company, but he has, his motivations are related to, like, the two broadcasting companies and hating Galaxy Broadcasting System or something. So it's kind of a funny motivation for a villain.
Yeah, it is.
But yeah, I was my favorite. Obviously, my favorite part of the issue is just like Superman writing these messages, trashing another, trashing a media company. It's not something you usually see him do.
No,
especially Morgan Edge is a tightwad. That's a classic.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Very nice.
See.
All right.
See, senor.
So, guess what? I've got more Superman to cover. Because you can't have too much Superman on the Retrocast.
Welcome to From Crisis to Crisis.
Yeah. So none of this was planned, Chris.
Atomic Skull has been appearing in Superwoman lately.
Yes.
In case you're interested.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I like Superwoman.
So what I'm going to cover is a two-parter. It's Superman 423 and Action Comics 583. Is anyone familiar with those?
423 Action what?
Action 583.
Not without looking at the covers.
Yeah.
I don't remember them.
I've never read these before. It is Whatever Happened to the Man of Tomorrow.
Oh, yeah. I have read this several times.
Sure. I've never read it before. Heard about it since.
You're in an Alan Moore kick is what you are. That's the truth.
I got this little trade for Christmas. And it includes the two stories for that.
But do you have them? Do you own them?
No. Mm-mm.
Okay. Because there are collectibles.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, every one of the issues you've done so far.
Yeah, I've got Superman Annual 11.
Yeah, that one's a collectible book. It's not cheap.
I don't have the two that I'm going to cover here, and the only other book that's in this collection is DC Comics Presents 85, which is the other Alan Moore one, Superman and Swamp Thing, and I do believe I own that one too, but I don't own these last two issues before it went to Post Crisis.
Well, I own all the books you guys have talked about so far.
Well, what do you think of that?
Well, what about that?
I'm usually able to find one, but not this time.
Yeah, I thought you might have me with Invaders, but I had them.
Mm.
Yeah.
And I don't. I'm renting them. But
you're renting them,
yes. Yeah, I was gonna say I thought that must both be right before Crisis, because I know 584. Last year I read 584 because it's. The first action post-crisis.
Right, and then it goes to Adventures of Superman 424.
Yeah, right, yeah. It
goes back to number one.
But
I've never read these before. Obviously, I've heard about them, but I didn't know exactly what type of story it was. I have to say, I thought it was a really, really good story. Excellent. So have you read these before, Chris?
I've listened to really detailed description of them before I feel like I've heard about them on a couple podcasts, and it kind of throws my memory off, but I don't think I've actually sat down and read them for myself, actually.
Really good stories. So let me just, go through. It starts with Superman 423. That's the first part. It's by Alan Moore is the writer and Kurt Swan is the artist. And, in Superman, George Perez actually inks it. This is 10 years after Superman has disappeared from the face of the earth, and a lot of people believe that he's died. Tim Crane is a reporter from the Daily Planet, and because it's a 10-year anniversary, he's gone to talk to Lois Lane, who's now Mrs. Lois Elliott, for an interview on the Superman Memorial Edition of the paper. So how she starts off the narration is basically that there seemed to have been a very, very quiet time prior to the events that they're going to talk about. Most of his villains had either been destroyed or had basically disappeared, lying low. And so he went off into space. While he was off in space, Bizarro came to Metropolis and absolutely trashed it. They called Superman. Jimmy called Superman with his watch, signal watch, and he eventually showed up after, you know, a ton of the city has been destroyed, knocking down buildings and everything else. And Bizarro's holed up in a department store, and Superman goes and confronts him, and he's acting very, very strange. You might even say bizarre. Trying to be the perfect, imperfect duplicate of Superman. And so we're basically saying that, you know, that he realized that Superman never kills, so he killed a lot of people. And, you know, he's like, I need to be the perfect, imperfect duplicate. And he's got a little piece of blue kryptonite, and he said, see, you're alive. He says, you am alive, Superman. And if me am perfect, imperfect duplicate, then me have to be. And he collapses. He says, everything, him go dark. Hello, Superman. Hello. And then he dies. So very, very strange. Lois is telling the reporter, like, after years of harmless stupidity, he suddenly launched himself into a rampage of genocide, homicide, and finally suicide. And she says, but that seems trivial compared to what came next. So we cut to the unmasking of Superman. And Clark gets a delivery of a small box and a very large box just before he has to go on the air. And he said, oh, I'll just open up this small box real quick first before we go on the air. I'll open up the other one later. And it had a bunch of Superman action figures. And she says, oh, you see how these work? You press their legs together, and I don't know what's supposed to happen, but actual, like, lasers shoot out of the eyes and, like, zap the desk in half. And then all of a sudden they start moving and start flying around the whole TV station and start blasting all over the place, and they all converge on Clark and start blasting him. And, of course, they think that he's being sliced up, but as soon as the blasting stops, everyone can see that his outer clothes are torn to shreds, and everyone can see that he's actually Superman because he's got Superman's costume on underneath. So he's now been unmasked as Superman, and the action figures start talking to him, and he hears that it's the Toy Man and the Prankster working together. And they said, go ahead, and they say to him, go ahead and open up the big box, and no fear peeking, it's lead-lined. So he thinks it's probably going to be a bomb. He opens it up, and it's not a bomb. It's a Pete in the box. And it's Pete Ross, and he springs out, and he's dead. And because of the fact that they're contacting him through these action figures, he can see the radio waves, and he goes flying off and heads straight for their headquarters. And, you know, obviously they gave in, it says, almost immediately, but they couldn't tell him why that they started murdering his friends. And when he asked, they just looked dazed and confused. So at that point, he put away his Clark Kent alternate identity, and it was useless. So it was just Superman from that point on. And at Pete Ross's funeral, he just decided that he needs to gather up all his other close friends and take them to the Fortress of Solitude to keep them safe. He didn't know who was coming back next. He said, if the nuisances from the past are becoming killers, what happens when the killers come back? And he didn't say who he was speaking about, but of course everyone assumed that he was talking about the big guns like Luther and Brainiac. And the reporter says to Lois, well, hadn't Brainiac been destroyed? And she says, well, we thought that he did, but as we found out later, other people hadn't given up so easily. And it cuts to somewhere up, maybe up north in the Arctic, and Lex Luthor is just hiking through all the snow with this little device going deet, 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 and he finds Brainiac's head, the robot Brainiac's head. He said, ah, he's like, I knew I could find you. I can now study your alien technology and find out, you know, discover secrets. And suddenly the head starts kind of shifting and breaking apart, climbing up him and covering his skull. and basically taking over his body. So now it's Brainiac is able to move around again. He's not just a head. He's totally taken over Lex Luthor's mind. So he looks like he's got a Brainiac hat on his head, and Brainiac's totally controlling him, just having him walk back the way he came. The next thing that happens, you know what? He hadn't taken anyone yet to the Fortress of Solitude, because the next thing that happens is there's a whole army of Metallos that go ahead and storm the WGBS building, which is also the Daily Planet. It's been merged at this point in continuity. And they throw Lois out the window, and Superman is able to save Lois, and then he's able to convert the Daily Planet symbol, the big planet on the top, to a huge super magnet, and all the Metallos get sucked up, magnetized, to the globe. So at that point, that's when he's sending everyone back up to the Fortress of Solitude with him. So they all go there. Crypto had been out in space for years, but he suddenly returns. And it's, even though everyone was happy to see Crypto, everyone thought it was kind of ominous that all of a sudden he comes from nowhere to be back with Superman. The Kryptonite Man is now terrorizing Metropolis, and Superman's in the Fortress of Solitude with his friends. And Brainiac controlling Luthor in Brainiac's ship uses a tractor beam and grabs the Kryptonite Man to use for their own. So everyone is kind of doing their own thing in the Fortress of Solitude, and Superman's briefly visiting Supergirl's little memorial in the Fortress of Solitude. I hadn't realized that she had died. Does anyone remember that? I thought she died in Crisis.
Supergirl?
Yeah.
She did die in Crisis.
That's what I thought. But here it's actually showing that she's already dead. Well, of course, this is a future story, so I guess.
Yeah, it takes place in the future.
Yeah. Although these things are supposed to be the present, and Lois talking to the reporters in the future, but this could be just an alternate reality. Who knows? I'm not sure.
It's almost like in the Superman in Action, they did a lot of, like, stories that were just stories.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is kind of like that. Like,
well, yeah, I mean, I know all together it is, but I thought that the story that they're telling, that Lois is telling the reporter, was based on the actual continuity of the time, but maybe it's not, because it definitely shows that she's dead, because the Legion of Superheroes show up in a time bubble.
Yeah.
To kind of talk to Superman, and Supergirl is with the Legion at that time. And she's like, oh, you know, how come, where's, you know, where am I? I must be all grown up in this time, because I'm from the past visiting the Legion of Superheroes. And he's like, yeah, you grow up to be beautiful, but you're, you know, out in space right now. But, you know, he brings Brainiac 5 over and says, you know, why is she here? You know that she's dead in this era. You know, why did you bring her? And he says, you know, she insisted, and so on and so forth. So they present Superman with a little statue of him holding what seems to be the Phantom Zone projector. And they don't really tell him why, but Superman starts to get the impression that they're paying their last respects. And as a matter of fact, Saturn Girl, you know, they say they have to go, and they say, you know, we'll miss you always. And Saturn Girl's like kind of crying and stuff. And he didn't get any answers from them, but it was obvious that they were very upset. And then there's no narration from future, you know, the Lois talking to the reporter saying that he never told me exactly what happened that night before the siege began. But as soon as I saw him the next morning, I knew something had upset him. He looked funny. And on the last page, it says he looked as if he'd been crying. And that's what it just shows, a full page spread of him just sitting on the floor crying with Crypto at his feet. And that's the last page of the Superman 423. So we go into the second part in Action Comics 4 or 583, which is again Alan Moore and Kurt Swan, this time inked by Kurt Schaffenberger. So it picks up where it left off. Lois is bringing some coffee to Tim Crane, the reporter, when her husband, Jordan, pops in. And Jordan starts bad-mouthing Superman, and she tells him to lay off. And then we go back to her story that she's telling, that he destroyed the key to get into the fortress. They're basically just preparing for the worst. And sure enough, Brainiac's ship arrives at the Fortress of Solitude. He brings out Brainiac in Lex's body, brings out the Kryptonite Man, and the Legion of Supervillains arrive, saying that they know that this is the time frame where Superman finally is defeated by his greatest foe. And they came to participate because they know that it's going to be, they know for sure that he's going to lose. And so they actually want to do more than watch. They actually want to participate. So they said that they tell Brainiac that it's said that in the last days all the Earth's champions flock to help him. So using that logic, Brainiac puts up an impenetrable force screen all around the Fortress of Solitude so no one can help him. And then they announce their presence, and Superman, using any weapons that he has in the Fortress of Solitude, try to destroy the weapons that Brainiac and company are using to attack the Fortress of Solitude long distance. Sure enough, all of his friends are trying to get into the force bubble but can't get in. So there's a few interlude scenes with him talking to Perry and so on and so forth. And also then it cuts to Lana and Jimmy talking about how in the past they've been their own superheroes, with Jimmy being Elastic Lad. And I don't remember Lana having powers, but I guess she bathed in some sort of magic lake water.
And Insect Queen.
I don't know. It doesn't look like an insect, but it could be a different thing, because it says that it's given her basically super strength and super senses.
Okay.
And she can fly as well. She doesn't have like any type of insect costume there. But anyhow, so she does that. He drinks the elastic serum, and they're like, we're going to go out there and we're going to beat these bad guys, because Superman shouldn't have to do it on his own. So they go down to attack, and it seems like Alana has like a lot of the powers of Superman, and she starts attacking the Kryptonite Man because of course she doesn't care that he's made out of kryptonite. That's not hurting her. Jimmy goes to try to destroy the generator that's keeping his force field up. So suddenly Lex Luthor is able to actually exert himself a little bit, and he says, Lana, Brainiac, he's got me. Kill me, Lana. Please kill me. And he says, Lana, do it now. Please do it now. And she snaps and she cracks him over the head and snaps his neck. And so they think that he's dead. And they're like, the Legion of Supervillains, like, oh, we didn't expect this. But so they start attacking Jimmy and Lana, and they knock Lana down, and Lightning, what's his name? Lightning, I can't remember his name. Is it Lightning King or something like that?
The older brother?
Yeah.
Lightning King, I think.
Yeah, I thought it was. Lightning Lord. So Lightning Lord offers to give Lana his hand to help her up, and of course he electrocutes her, and there's nothing but like just a charred corpse on the ground, and so she's done. And Jimmy jumps down to attack, and he gets shot in the back. And it's Brainiac, who's still alive in Lex's body. It looks really creepy because his neck is just totally broken. So it's like just like at a crazy angle on top of his body, but he still has control of the actual body itself. He's like, I've got enough control over his nerves and his muscles that I can manipulate him at least long enough to ensure Superman's destruction. So he says, prepare for a nuclear strike. Our final assault begins. So they blow a huge hole into the side of the Fortress of Solitude, and Perry saves his wife Alice from being crushed by some rocks. And they previously had a big falling out. They were looking to divorce each other, and this seems to reconcile them. Kryptonite Man goes into the breach to start shouting for Superman so he can kill him. Krypto barrels through and starts biting the crap out of Kryptonite Man and kills him. But at the same time, of course, Krypto gets kryptonite poisoning and he dies as well. So at this point, you've got Superman now with Lois trying to keep Lois out of harm when all three of the Legion of Supervillains encounter Superman, and Superman's really going nuts because the Lightning Lord tells Superman that he killed Lana. So he starts shooting his heat vision at them, and they're like, let's get out of here. We know that Brainiac's going to win. There's no sense in us getting hurt in the process. So they leave back to their own time. And there's only one foe left to fight, and that's, of course, Brainiac in Lex's body. Now, at this point, he starts noticing that rigor mortis is setting in, and he's losing control over Lex's limbs, and he just falls over. And he says, no, get up, Luther. I will not be betrayed by your human weakness. Where is my kryptonite man? Why is my force field still standing? Oh, I didn't mention, but Jimmy did knock the force field generator off, but it did not turn off the force field. It's still on for some reason. I don't know. I don't care. I'm coming for you, Kryptonian. My victory is inevitable. So Brainiac crawls off of his head, this little tiny like skull cap, and is trying to get to Superman, but he just disintegrates into a pile of plates and circuits. So Brainiac's dead. They think it's all over. And Superman's like, I don't understand what happened. How are all my enemies attacking me at once? Why is this force screen still keeping my friends out? And then there's the statuette the Legion gave me. It's almost as if they're giving me my own headstone as a gift. And he can't figure out. And then suddenly he's like, wait a minute, I understand. It's like, of course, Bizarro the Prankster, the Toy Man, Metallo, Brainiac, the Kryptonite Man, the Legion of Superheroes. There's only one name missing, isn't there? I know you're there, I don't know how to pronounce it. Come and show yourself. So sure
nobody
enough,
does, really.
I know. Well, it doesn't have any vowels. So, right. Mr. Mixoplick shows up and he's like, yep. He's like, it's been me all along. He's like, I'm immortal. And I get bored from time to time. I spent my first 2,000 years of existence doing nothing. I didn't move. I didn't even breathe. After that, I was a saint for 2,000 years doing only good deeds. When that novelty began to fade, I decided to be mischievous, and that's what I've been doing since then. Now, I'm bored again, so I need a change. Starting with your death, I shall spend the next 2 millennia being evil. And who knows, after that, maybe I'll try being guilty for a while. And he changes from his little imp-like form to, like, it looks like very evil, like glowing purple demon. And he's like, this is what I really look like. So he goes to attack Superman. And Superman looks down at the statue again. He's like, I know what I've got to do. So he runs to the phantom projector, and he grabs it. And he's like, it's time to die. He turns on the phantom zone projector's single Cyclops eye staring from his hands, finger moving towards its black button. Mixoplick had no means to escape except for one, and he says his name backwards. With an utterance of his reverse name, the creature's magic returned him to the fifth dimension, while at the same instant, the ray sent him into the Phantom Zone, basically tearing him in half and killing him. So Superman is upset because he said, I couldn't let him stay alive. He was too powerful to survive, but I broke my oath and I killed him. And Lois tries to console him, and he's like, nope. He's like, nobody has the right to kill. Nobody, not especially not Superman. So he walks to the back of the Fortress of Solitude, and it's a gold kryptonite chamber, sample storage chamber. And I believe that the gold kryptonite makes him permanently lose his powers. So he walks in there. He smiles at Lois, and she says, "I never saw Superman again." Everyone assumes that because of the gold kryptonite, and he wasn't in that chamber anymore, they found a hidden passageway leading out of the fortress, and it was concluded that he walked out powerless into the sub-zero waste to freeze, and they never found his body. So they all assume that he died. And the reporter says, "What do you think of rumors that Superman is still alive somewhere?" And she says, "Well, you know what? I know that there's a lot of people who don't believe that, but as far as I'm concerned, Superman died in the Arctic. I was there." He's like, "Oh, I'm sorry. Of course, that last question was tactless. You know, it's the same with all these other celebrities. There's rumors that you know, they're still alive." And then they turn and her husband is there, and it turns out that their son had just woken up. His name's Jonathan. And like, "Oh, do you have a kiss for mommy?" And so the reporter thanks them and leaves, and they put little Jonathan down to play for a while, and Lois and Jordan, her husband, are just talking to each other and stuff. And you see little Jonathan playing in a little thing of coal for the fire that's nearby, and he's grabbing a piece of coal, and sure enough, he's squeezing it and dropping back the diamond back into the pile. And Lois says, "You know, you were pretty hard on Superman earlier. Superman, he was overrated and too wrapped up in himself. He thought the world couldn't." "Thank you, honey. Oh, I got a little present from Allie." So he said, "Thought the world couldn't get along without him." "And thank you." And the last thing is that she says, "Well, you know, after dinner, maybe we should go up to bed and a bottle of wine, and after that we could live happily ever after." And she says, "Sound good to you?" And he says, "Lois, my love, what do you think?" And he winks, and the last thing is him winking at the panel. And it's quite clear that that's really Clark, that he, you know, he did survive, and he's powerless now, but they produced Superboy. And that's the end of the issue. I know I was kind of long in covering these two, but I really, really loved this story, and it was great reading it for the first time.
Very cool.
Yeah, I loved it.
Like most Alan Moore stories, almost everybody dies.
Yep.
Well, I have three more books, but I'm going to combine them all because they're all related. And I'm going to summarize them kind of like in the Invaders, the way you did the Invaders. So I read – well, let me thank Donnie Salvo. He sent me Ghost Rider number 3, which helps me finish my volume 1 or help get me closer. And that led me to read this, but in order to read it, I had to read number 2, and I hadn't read number 2 yet. I've read number 1 because I bought Ghost Rider number 1 over the summer at the convention. So this is by Gary Friedrich, and he also does Marvel Spotlight number 12, because Damian Hellstrom is in Ghost Rider number 1, number 2, number 3, and also in Marvel Spotlight. Matter of fact, his first appearance as Hellstrom is in number 1 of Ghost Rider, and then he's as Son of Satan, it's in Marvel Spotlight number 12. So this series is like really weird, but man, it's like addictive as hell. He the Ghost Rider is Johnny Blaze, and he worked at the stunt show. Right now he's running from the law, and he's in hospital, and he can only turn to Ghost Rider when it turns dark. Oh. So it complicates things dramatically for the character and for the storylines, but it makes it really, really bizarre. And in issue 2, he's trying to save his girlfriend Rocky, who's Roxanne. He calls her Rocky. He loves her. he's trying to like sell his soul back to the devil. He's like, I can't do this anymore. I need to go to hell. So he summons the witch woman, which is really a part of Ghost Rider number one, because in a reservation on the U.S., I think it's Arizona, Native American family calls Hellstrom to do an exorcism on their daughter. But before he gets there, the daughter goes to hell and becomes witch woman. So he gets there. This, the part that's really fascinating is he gets there and he wraps this Egyptian chain around his hands. And he's like, whatever you do, don't let me out of the room. Whatever, I might beg you, I'll kick and scream, don't let me out of the room. I'm going to get your daughter back. Well, one of the first things they do is they let him out of the room. I don't understand that. He even tells them, he's like, I'm going to beg you, I'm going to plead with you to don't let me out of the room, whatever you do. But Ghost Rider goes to hell, and while he's in hell, he's fighting the witch woman, and Hellstrom is going to save witch woman, which is the Native American woman that's possessed by the devil. And meanwhile, he was with Roxy, and it's pretty weird because like there's scenes where he'll be riding his bike and then he'll turn into Ghost Rider and vice versa. He'll turn into Johnny Blaze. And Johnny Blaze is like critically wounded. So the interesting thing, at least I think it's fascinating, is if he's critically wounded, he's like an invalid. He can't get out. He can't move. So if the light comes up, the sun comes up, he's just gonna flop down. He can't move. He can't do anything. As Ghost Rider, he can move around and use his powers. But Hellstrom actually goes. He escapes, and he hates his father so much that just for spite, he rescues Johnny Blaze and the lady from hell and brings them, leaves them in the middle of the desert to die. I mean, just drops them off in his chariot with flaming horses and leaves them to die. Meanwhile, his woman is in the middle of the desert because he went to hell, and this motorcycle gang shows up, and before that they had fought like Ghost Rider, and it's weird because when he turns into the skull, people think he's just wearing a costume. They think like Johnny Blaze is in his motorcycle gear, but he seems like he's contemplating like raping her, like he's gonna take her as his woman. And she gets away because of Hellstrom originally, because he needs to find out where Ghost Rider is, and he's in hell. And so she's rescued for just a short period of time, and then he captures her again, and then is reading the paper later on when he gets out of hell, and he's like, oh, Johnny Blaze has money? Well, maybe I'll ransom her off to him. And Johnny Blaze is back in the hospital because when he came out of hell, Witch Woman, even though she didn't have her powers anymore because she wasn't possessed by Satan, she taught him how to make a motorcycle out of hellfire. So he can make a motorcycle, but she couldn't ride the motorcycle on hellfire because it wasn't physically there was no seat for her to sit on. So she says, we're gonna die out here as soon as the sun comes up because it's gonna be like 110, we're in the middle of nowhere, so go get help. So he goes to get help, but as he's getting help, the sun comes up and he sees the highway, and when the sun comes up, he loses his, because he's critically wounded, he can't drive the motorcycle, so he crashes it into the freeway and kills like, I don't know, a trucker and three people in a car because he can't control his bike and causes a traffic accident, and everything goes up into flames. And then they take him back to the hospital. And then he escapes from the hospital at night because he can turn back to Ghost Rider. And that's when he runs into Big Daddy, the motorcycle gang guy, and actually kills him. He actually kills him. So he like has no conscious about who he's killing or anything, but he doesn't really know what's going on either. He knows he can transfer bodies and be healthy and then be invalid in one case. But yeah, I am fascinated with this series.
He's not aware of what's going on when he's Ghost Rider?
Oh, he knows what's going on. Okay. And his girlfriend knows what Roxy, she knows what's going on. Nobody else knows. The public thinks he's just leaving his hospital bed at night in his costume. He's suiting up in his motorcycle gear and leaving the hospital. They don't know that he's really a supernatural being. They just think that he leaves the hospital every night. And he's under, like, police protection because he's, you know, wanted by the law.
Yeah.
So, and then he feels guilty because he couldn't – while he was in the hospital in issue one, he couldn't do the stunt. So one of his best friends, who's always been jealous of him, does the stunt for him and dies. So he tries to jump, you know, some cars and stuff, and he crashes the bike and gets killed. So it's a really convoluted story. And having the Son of Satan in there was really, really bizarre, but it makes sense. His motivations at this time, though, are not heroic at all. Like when he's Hellstrom, he's totally like a guy that tries to go and exorcise demons out of people. But as soon as it becomes night, he's very much like a Ghost Rider. As soon as the sun sets, he turns to the Son of Satan. And that's why he told those two people to lock the door. He's like, lock the door. And the idiot opens the door. Like, I don't know what he would have done if they kept the door locked, though. Because he would have turned into the Son of Satan, but he wouldn't have been able to leave the room. So I don't know how he would have got back to hell to do any of the stuff that he did. Unless he could call upon his chariot. That's how he got to hell in the first place. He's got like a chariot with flaming horses. And that's how he's able to access hell. And his father hates him. I mean, he tried to kill him as he was exiting hell. But the hatred became because he came to rescue the two bodies that he wanted to condemn to hell. But yeah, he's cool as hell. Like, I can't wait to keep reading these things. And that's one of my goals for my New Year's resolution is to finish my Ghost Rider Volume 1 and Volume 2.
That's great.
And then I have all the other Ghost Riders. I've already completed the Son of Satan's. And I have one more Marvel Spotlight Ghost Rider to complete. I have his first appearance and then every appearance after that Marvel Spotlight except for the very last one, which is the issue right before 12. Number 11 is the only issue I'm missing, which is right before Son of Satan. Nice. That's Son of Satan starts in Marvel Spotlight right after Ghost Rider ends.
I am definitely going to get the last two issues of X-Men I need this year.
Yeah.
I actually have it already. I see some places I can go to get them. It's just a matter of I'm going to wait until after my birthday in February. I should have a little bit of spending
which,
money.
Which ones are you missing?
33 and 70. I always forget the 71, but I think it's 79.
Well, those aren't too bad, right?
No. They're, I mean, 30, 33, probably between 100 and 200. And
yeah.
79, 100 at the most. That would be like a really good copy.
Yeah.
But I don't need to have a really good copy, so.
Yeah, but you like to have it at least fine, right?
Yeah,
fine
yeah. Or very yeah, fine. I'm not going to – I mean, I could have gotten – you know, good or very good copies any time, probably, you know,
for
Fox. But yeah, I wanted a little bit better than that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my big purchase this year, if everything goes well, will be Daredevil number one.
That is huge.
I will then have completed every single Daredevil comic. I'm missing like two of them besides that, but they're not like expensive. They're like in your ghost. Well, it depends on what you say is expensive. Yeah. They're not in the thousands. Let's just say they're in the three digits.
I don't consider. Yeah, I'm with you that like the ones that I need, being that the ones that I've already bought, right? I don't consider those that. It's like I just don't want to spend money left and right, but at the same time, it's easily affordable. I just want to wait until I have that extra spending money.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So that's it for me. I covered 2, 3, and Marvel Spotlight number 12. So whoever's next.
Chris, you got anything?
I'm hungry.
You're hungry? Yeah. I was going to talk about
I'm ready to eat lunch.
But we can do that maybe next time.
Or do you want to do a quick rundown? You don't have to break down the whole thing, but
yeah. Well, let me just talk about it. I want to know if you guys maybe we can. I'll just ask if you guys saw this. Mm-hmm. A couple weeks ago, we watched Escape from Alcatraz. Has anyone seen it? Clint Eastwood?
Yeah, I have.
Okay, I didn't know ahead of time if this was a true story or not.
It's based on it. Yeah. As I was watching Discovery Channel on it. They never found those fuckers.
No,
it's absolutely fascinating. There were three of them.
They think that they probably died, but there's no proof because they never found the bodies, so they don't know if they died.
Right. They think they might have died in a boat or something, but
they blew up. They blew up like life or rain jackets. To use those as like a lifeboat. But
they said they could be alive still and mm-hmm. just have blended in society as somebody else or something.
Yep, they said that they if they had left before midnight, it's possible that they would have made it. But if they did it after midnight, I guess the way the tides and the current goes and stuff, very unlikely they would have been able to reach the shore.
It was really an incredible escape. Like if you see how they did it.
I compared the movie to like kind of reading the actual escape.
Yeah.
Very, very true to in terms of how they actually did it. Mm-hmm. They did a very good job at keeping it kind of the actual method of escape to what really happened.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm basically, you know, we don't have to go into it, but yeah, you're right. I mean, these three guys, Clint Eastwood's character and his two brothers, basically tunneled out through the vent in their cell to right behind there was like kind of an unused like utility. I don't even know what you would call it. It's not a corridor. It's like more vertical than anything else. Behind there with all the pipes and stuff like that. And they were able to climb all the way up the pipes to like the roof. And from the roof, they were able to, you know, get down and with the stuff that they had taken from the different areas of the prison, they basically blew up these raincoats so they could float on them. And then went and got away that way. They also made paper mache dummies, to stick on their beds so nobody discovered them until the morning time.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a fourth guy that was supposed to go both in the movie and in real life, but he was having problems with his false vent because after they took it out, they kind of put like a paper mache one on there. It just would come off. He had to like glue it on because it kept falling off. And he had trouble getting it back off. And by the time he was able to get up into that utility area, they were already gone. And so he just crawled back down and went back into a cell. And
is that in the movie or?
It's in the movie and
in the documentary
mm-hmm.
that I saw on Discovery Channel, it said they believed it was cold feet. Like he got far, but he turned around.
I just did Wikipedia, so it's just a very quick thing, and
yeah.
I'm sure your documentary is probably a lot more. thorough. They did say that he gave them all the information. That's how they know what happened, because he gave them all the information on how they escaped.
Yeah, yeah.
And they didn't. In turn, they didn't punish him for.
It'd be fascinating if one of them lived, though. That's what would be really.
Even if one of them.
Because if one of them lived, by some law that they would not be imprisoned again. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, really?
Yeah. There's a law if you get past a certain term in your thing that they can't put you in jail or something.
Wow. It was just super, super interesting to watch this and then to kind of go back to some of the information and see how much of it was actually very close to what they actually did to escape. It was just an unexpectedly good movie that is going on 40 years old. I just had never seen before, but I
can't go wrong with Clint Eastwood.
Oh, it's a great movie.
It's hard to.
I remember the old those. I don't know if you had HBO as a kid, but they used to give in the mail. You used to get an HBO guide to show you what was on.
Yeah, it was a little little booklet,
a little small thing. And I remember that being either the cover to one or a preview for the following months. It was like a full page.
Yeah, it kind of has half his face looking out of a crack.
Yes, and it was just iconic.
It's great tones, right?
As a little kid. And then finally, all these years later, I finally actually watched the movie.
Yeah.
It was on sale on Amazon a while back on Blu-ray for like $6
mm-hmm.
or $5, so I bought it. And it was well worth the purchase. It was a great movie.
And Chris, I did buy that Universal Monsters Blu-ray.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, is it all the monster movies?
It's all the Universal monster movies. Oh, yeah. And I did buy the Abbott Costello monster movies too.
Oh, nice.
Which is like four Abbott Costello movies. And I bought The Mummy, which is the Hammer film.
Oh, okay.
Because I got addicted to the Hammer comic, The Mummy from Titan Comics. And I was like, I want to watch the movie now. So. All right, let's wrap this guy up so we
got
some veggie food into Chris.
Hopefully.
Some nuts and berries.
I'm going to eat meat.
Whatever sustains you.
All right. You can reach us at Geek Brunch Podcast. You can reach Rob at – you're just at Rob Krieger, right?
Yep, Krieger.
On Twitter, Krieger. I'll never get it right, Rob. I'll correct myself, but I'll never get it right the first time.
That's all right.
I don't do it on purpose.
I know.
It's kind of Raish and Roz.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. If it was the only thing you mispronounced, it'd be a lot more offensive, I think.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Chris, you can reach at MythMakingETC, and I'm at Mike Myers Brunch. And on Facebook, we're the Geek Brunch Podcast. And leave an iTunes review. And thanks for listening, and I'll talk to you guys in 2 weeks if you're available.
Sounds all right. Nice. Should be.
Thank all you. Right. Welcome back. I'm glad to hear
Welcome
your
back,
voice.
Chris.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm back from the Outer Rim, back from my missions.
Glad you made it.
So, ready all to right. read some comics.
I hope it was good to you, your little break. And your
I think it worked out all right. I think it was a good idea.
Have either of you guys read AD, After Death?
Yeah.
No, I saw that came out, though.
It is deep, man.
I think it's absolutely fascinating.
It is fabulous.
It's basically a novel.
The prose in it is just amazing.
Yes.
It's like mesmerizing, even though it's simplicity.
Issue two yesterday.
I read issue one this morning, and I'm like, oh, shit.
That's a long read.
Oh, yeah. I think I'm 40 minutes in so far.
Yeah.
And I have two more pages to go, so I haven't finished it yet.
Yeah, it's fabulous. Chris, if you get a chance, it's just an amazing story. I can't wait to see how this ends.
It's like magazine format too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did not expect that either.
Yeah, I figured I would just check it out someday, like collect it or something.
Yeah, they'll probably put it in a nice hardcover.
It's only three issues, yeah. So,
All right.
Because I like both those creators, so I figured I definitely want to read it at some point.
Yeah, it actually is weird for me because it feels it reads like a Jeff Lemire book, and it feels like a Jeff Lemire book, but it's Scott Snyder writing it.
Yeah.
It's really weird.
Yeah, I agree. It's well done.
The dialogue actually feels to me so much like something that could come out of Jeff Lemire.
I agree.
Yeah. All right. Well, you guys have a good Sunday. Enjoy football if you're going to watch it, and I'll talk to you guys later.
Okay.
You too.
Bye.
Bye-bye.